Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
This shmuz is being dedicated to Le'iluy Nishmas Yaakov Tzvi Ben Levi Yitzchak. Jerry Grossbart, Olav HaShalom, his yard site just concluded this evening. And there are many things that can be said about our dear Jerry. One thing that certainly is true is that he was always in the forefront of the next step in our community. He was always a leader in anticipating and in creating and providing what our community needed in growth as a Makom Torah. He was always a bit ahead of his time, as a matter of fact. And it's very appropriate that I think the first shmuz that the Rav of Beth Jacob has ever given, the first Elul shmuz, is given in his memory, because he was a firster, definitely a firster. And that brings me to the topic of the shmuz itself, which is that this is in response to people who've asked for a shmuz. So people ask for it, and I don't consider myself naturally worthy of an Elul shmuz. I can use one myself, we can all use them. And but the Makom She'enish, and I don't mean that there's nobody else, but since there's only one rabbi and I'm it, so it's going to have to be me. And I know next week in Mitzvah Hashem we have the Rosh HaKolo, but I don't know if they're calling it a shmuz. I don't know if it's a shmuz. But this is a shmuz. As a matter of fact, I will tell you that my Elul has changed because I agreed to do this. I've already had a totally different Elul. And therefore, I am now announcing that the next week, for those who want, every night at 10 o'clock right after Maariv, I'll be giving a 15-minute vav. I'm doing this selfishly. You don't have to be there. But it would be helpful if you would be there, just so I won't be talking to the wall. But I'll be doing it whether you're there or not for 15 minutes. As soon as Maariv is over, we'll go to a side classroom, and we'll do it over there. That's so I can continue to have an Elul. So what is a Musar Shmuz? So most of you know what a Musar Shmuz is, but there's actually there are different purposes and goals of a Shmuz. So I want to address those, because I want you to know what you're aiming at. I want you to know what I'm aiming at. So first of all, one goal of a Shmuz is to wake you up, right? To wake up the listener. We should actually be awakened and focused on reality, as opposed to something other than reality. That's one goal. Another goal is to motivate a person, right? So that a person actually is inspired and moved, literally moved, to take on new initiatives, new actions, address different issues. Motivation. So that's an important goal. I would say another important goal is actually to change your view, to change the way you look at things, because whatever you're doing right now, the way you are right now, is a result of how you're looking at something, how you're looking at Rosh Hashanah, how you're looking at yourself, how you're looking at a Kaddish Baruch Hu, how you're looking at what Kaddish Baruch Hu wants from us. And the goal is to add in a way, or change in a way, the way you look at something, so that your actions would then be a result of seeing a different world. So that's another goal of the shmuz, is to actually change the view that you have of your own life and of reality itself, or what you think is reality. Another purpose, I'll call this the fourth purpose in my list, is for the shmuz itself to exemplify a midah, where the person in his very being providing the shmuz actually personifies what he's talking about. That's not going to happen here, okay? That's not going to happen. Meaning, I'm going to talk about things, but I don't claim that by listening to me and watching me now, while I'm up here, that you're going to see what I'm talking about in my being. That's a chisaron. Unfortunately, it's not true. But you should know that that's really, a shmuz is actually not the words. A shmuz is actually the essence of the person giving the shmuz. I had the schuss of seeing and hearing of David Krumglass. I don't remember most of what he said, but I remember who he was when he gave the shmuz. And I remember seeing him before the shmuz, I remember seeing him after the shmuz, And the Shmuz was not in any way exceptional from the way he behaved before he was talking and the way he behaved after he was talking. Whatever he said in the Shmuz, you could actually see it in life the moment he sat down and the next day, all day, in the Beis Medrash. I had the schuss of hearing Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz give a Shmuz every single week. I also had, as part of a vod in his house, I sat right around the corner of his dining room table and heard him every week for almost a year, or whatever a yeshiva year is, a few zmanim. And again, it was who he was. It was not really what he was saying. And when Reb Chaim would cry while he was saying it, in his own broken voice, so that had more of an impression on us than just than what he said, although obviously what he said was Torah from the altar, Slobodka Torah from Mashkiach, but it wasn't just the content, it was what he exemplified and how he presented. So that's something that we don't all have, but I just wanted to acknowledge that that's one of the things that we look for in a Shmuz. And finally, this is something that only a Rav can do, and it has nothing to do with the qualifications of the Rav. One of the purposes of a Shmuz is not to be I really want to talk to each one of you individually, but it's not efficient, so we gather all together and I have a message and all of you hear it together. That's not what a Shmuz is. A Shmuz is to talk to a Tzibur, so that the Tzibur itself has a value in it that's placed in the Tzibur, that now the Tzibur can embrace as a whole, as a body, so that the Tzibur is aware of a direction and is able to focus on something of common avoda. Just knowing that you're part of a Tzibur that's doing that makes a tremendous difference. And that, I think, is a very big benefit of having a talk during the month of Elul and focusing ourselves a little bit on what our avoda is. So let's talk about waking up first. So, first of all, in order to wake up, you have to know you're asleep, right? You can't wake up if you don't know you're asleep. So we are all sleeping. We are so matura, we're so distracted by the multiple demands on our time and on our energy, and the multiple interruptions, the multiple cries for attention, that we don't even realize it. We actually don't realize how rough it is and how not focused we are on anything. Think about it. What's the most important thing in your life? Don't tell me. Whatever it is, think about how much time you spend on it and how many interruptions you have from that focus. Think about it. Think about how your life is set up so that whatever it is that's important to you, you're not doing that consistently and you're not doing it with focus. I'm sure it's true. It's the way it is. That's the nature, first of all, the Yetzer Hara. That's one of the major, major strengths and tools of the Yetzer Hara, is to make sure that you're not focused. And the Bali Musar, Mesillas Yesharim, all the way through, talk about the fact that tirdus, which I would call distractions, not just burdens, but distractions, that is the way that we make sure, that the Yetzer Hara makes sure that we're not focused on anything. We have to understand that we're not focused. I mean, think about it. I remember years ago when the cell phones started becoming absolutely ubiquitous. So, you know, I would walk into the house on the phone, right? Because if you have a phone, you have to talk on it, right? So you walk into the house and you walk through the front door after a long day and you have your wife and kids and you walk into the house and you're on the phone. And after a while I realized I might as well not come home, because what I'm saying is I'm not here. And I'm not just saying it to them, I'm saying it to myself. Wherever I am, I'm not really here. And we have a million different ways of not being wherever we are. It's unbelievable. It's all over the place. So we have to understand that we are not focused on anything. Whatever we say that we care about, we're not lying about it. We're just not really applying ourselves. We're totally distracted by zillions of requests for our time. Last week I was on a plane. So it was Southwest Airlines. So Southwest Airlines they advertise that they have Wi-Fi on all their planes, except for the old ones, okay? So I get on the plane, and I had set aside for myself specifically some learning that I wanted to do on the plane, and I had everything that I needed in order to learn. And then the flight attendant gets on the thing and they say, we apologize, our Wi-Fi will not be working today on the plane. I got upset. I got upset because it wasn't something that was going to distract me from what I was going to do. I was disappointed because now I couldn't get onto the Wi-Fi to see what I don't want to watch because I want to learn instead. But I was distracted by the fact that I didn't have a distraction. I didn't know what to do with myself. I'm actually isolated on the plane. Without distraction, that's distracting. Right? So, but it's that way all the time. I heard somebody else talk about the fact that they normally fly, I think, American Airlines. This time they flew United Airlines. And United Airlines advertises they now have 100 channels on the planes. So that you have a choice of 100 channels. Which means, by the way, that if you're flying from, like, you know, New York to Atlanta, that means you can watch every channel for 1 minute and 25 seconds. And then you have to go to the next one because you can't possibly get all 100 channels in. But the point is, this is considered normal to us. We don't think that's crazy, that there are 100 different choices for a normal person to choose from to distract himself from the reality that he's sitting there alone on a plane and maybe he can contemplate something about his life, right? It's absolutely normal. Wow, 100 stacks, wow, that's pretty good. You can't even be a sports fan and be devoted. Now you have to go to a sports bar where you have all the games that are going on in the world at the same time. The world itself believes in distraction as a value. You shouldn't be focused on your team. You have to know what all the teams are. I'm just trying to point out this is nothing about Avodas Hashem. This is the world we're in. Wherever we go, there is something interrupting whatever it is that we say we're doing. And if we don't realize that, then we're really in trouble because then we really become robots. We have to understand and try to take control. This is really what the Rambam's talking about. The Rambam, you would think that the Rambam wrote his words today. The Rambam, the famous Rambam, Perek Gimel Hilchos Teshuva, Halacha Dalet, Afal Pi Shetkiyo Shofar Bo Shoshana Gzeiros HaKasuv, even though Shofar is what the Torah says to do, the Torah doesn't give you a reason, Gzeiros HaKasuv, Remez Yeshba, there's still an intended hidden message. Kolomar, Uru, Uru, Yeshenim Yishin Aschem, wake up, O slumberers, from your sleep, Hekitzu Nedomim Yitanim Aschem, and I don't know what Nidamim is like beyond, it's like comatose. And comatose people, wake up from your tardema, from your deep sleep. V'chipsu ma'aseichem, search your actions, v'chizur v'tshuva, v'zichu barachem, and return in tshuva and remember your creator. What do you mean remember your creator? Because you're not aware of your creator. You're aware of anything but. There's everything else going on in the world. You're not focused. Remember your creator. It's almost an absurdity if you think about it. Remember your creator? Remember the one who's giving you life? Remember the one who put you in the world with a tafkid? Remember because you forgot about him? That's what shofar is? The Rambam's telling us that we have to remember our creator? That's like, you know, yeah, taka, we have to remember our creator. Yeah, because we're absolutely not present to the fact that he is present. And that's what the Rambam's talking about. And he says, people who forget the reality, in the ridiculous, meaningless, momentary issues of the time. They spend all their time and their years in nothingness. They won't make a difference. Look after your own souls. Improve your ways and your paths. And abandon your evil ways and your not productive, not good thoughts. Okay, so therefore, this is a universal issue. The Rambam is telling us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu literally understood that we're going to be living this way, and he gives us a shofar in Rosh Hashanah to wake us up from our tardema. But we have to know that we're in a tardema in order to be able to begin to even try to wake up. So what do we do about all this? So first of all, we can actually control some of this. You know, as we walk, you know, we saw a beautiful full moon last week, right? We saw, you know, on Tesvav Elul, we saw a beautiful full moon. And then we know, Bakesa the Yom Chagenu, that moon every night is going to recede a little bit. It's going to get smaller and smaller and smaller until it totally disappears. And then when it disappears, it's going to be Yom Hadin. It's going to be Rosh Hashanah. So every single day, as the moon kind of starts disappearing, we realize we're getting closer to Yom HaDin, getting closer to reality, closer to a day that focuses on our purpose. And what we can do is we can actually see that recession as a way of kind of minimizing and eliminating some of the distractions that we invite upon ourselves. You know that there are goyim who come to phone stores with their smartphones and turn them in and say, get me a dumb phone, I can't live this way. And they're not, they have no mission, they have no purpose in knowing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They just don't want to have pay for the interruptions that happen every single minute. You know, this trip that I went on last week, it's crazy. In order to get somewhere, I had to take a cord to recharge, make sure I could recharge my earpiece for my phone. I had to take a cord to make sure that my phone could be recharged. I had to take a cord to make sure that my computer could be recharged. And I had to take a cord to make sure that in the car, between my destination, I could be and make sure that I have the charger so in case I need it. It's crazy for a 24-hour trip, right? And that's considered normal. The point is, I'm normal. I'm like everybody else. But the point is, we consider that acceptable. We can limit that. We can eliminate some of the distractions. I'll give you an example. There's no mitzvah for us to hear what the latest humiliating discussion in the elections happened in the last 24 hours. We actually could skip the same boring news because it's the same thing that's happened for the last 9 months, and we know that already. And there's no reason to know. There's no reason that we have to sit there distracting ourselves with that. There's no reason we have to turn on the radio to hear the person that's our favorite person who agrees with what we already thought before we turned it on and is saying for us how angry he is about whatever it is that we're angry about. We don't need to have that in order to be able to focus on Avodas Hashem. We don't need that, but we invite that upon ourselves. We don't even need music, really. We actually could actually find out what we would think if we didn't have music in the background when we were doing work and when we were sitting alone in a library or whatever it is. We don't have to have music. We don't have to have these things. We could actually ask ourselves, what would happen? What would it be like if I actually didn't have an interruption for a few minutes? So that would actually keep us a little bit focused on what it is that we're trying to do. I saw in a sefer, Rav Matisyahu Solomon asked a question, very interesting question, in Birchas HaChodesh. Everything that we daven for in Birchas HaChodesh makes sense. Okay. Chodesh Aleinu is a Chodesh Hazeh. Renew for us this month. So we're talking about the coming month when we bench Rosh Chodesh. So we say, L'tova v'l'bracha, for good and for bracha. And we ask for Chaim Shel Shalom, Chaim Shel Tova, Chaim Shel Bracha, Chaim Shel Parnasa, Chaim Shel Chilat HaSamos, Yiras Shamayim, Yiras Chet, everything. All these things make sense. Because we're asking for a month filled with all these brachas, all these wonderful things. There's one thing in here that doesn't make sense. We're asking for a month filled with all these things, and we ask for Sitan Lenu Chayim Aruchim, long life. What do you mean? We're asking for long life during this month? A month is 30 days long, 29, 30. What are we asking, to live longer this month than we lived last month? I understand that we could have Chaim Shel Shalom this month, Chaim Shel Tova this month, Chaim Shel Bracha this month. What's Chaim Aruchim? You can only live the month. It's not going to be long or short. It's just going to be a month. So what is Chaim Aruchim? The answer is, and this is something we all complain about, time flies, right? Time flies. It just seems to be passing by, and we don't, what have we done with it, and what have we accomplished, and so on and so forth. What we're asking for is a chayim of accomplishment, long life, meaning that this month is filled with moment by moment by moment of useful time, that we're actually applying ourselves to productive, creative undertakings and activity in the reason that we are here, in whatever it is that our tachlis is, whatever our matzav is, whatever our purpose in life is. As Yidden, we're saying, give me a chayim aruchim. Do you know that time does not fly? It only flies when you're wasting it. When you're not doing and accomplishing and creating and bringing something new into your being and into the world by the way that you're living, then time just flies. Because you found one way to waste it, another way to waste it, another way to get through the moment, another way to be distracted, another Wi-Fi thing, on the, whatever it is. It goes on and on and on. It just flies. It doesn't fly when every moment is used. It does just, wow, time is great. Time is useful. Time is productive. They, you know, this month, you know, I covered something. I memorized something. I took on something in my midos. I actually made, took some ground on it. That's Chaim Aruchim. That's a lot. This is a month that was 30 days long. I don't want a month that just flew by. I just spent Rosh Chodesh last month. I'm the same guy, same person. What happened? I can't believe it. 4 weeks ago I benched Rosh Chodesh, now I'm benching Rosh Chodesh, and I want a long month filled with accomplishment, with moment by moment that I'm using, as opposed to living from distraction to distraction and interruption into interruption. So that's in terms of waking up. Let's be aware that we have a life for a reason, and we have a tachlis. Now let's talk about motivation. So one of the challenges of Chodesh Elul is that we know how we should feel, but we don't necessarily feel that way. In a moment we don't feel the way we should feel, then we feel bad about the fact that we don't feel that way. And then we know we should feel that way, and then we blame ourselves for not being motivated. So why are we not motivated when indeed we're not? So there's a couple of things. First of all, we may not be focused on an incentive. We don't understand why it's good for us. We think it's something we should do. We think getting ready for Rosh Hashanah is something we should do. And if it's something that we should do, so it doesn't really have too much, there's not too much motivation there. It's just something we have to do. It's homework. And we worry, it's just a job. We don't have any view of preparations for Rosh Hashanah as something that we actually will gain from. That's part of it. But I think there's something else also, which is that there's something beyond depression. Now, depression is actually a stage that's not too far removed from health. Because when a person is depressed, he actually thinks that things should be better and different, and he feels a terrible pain, and he feels some kind of angst that he wants to get rid of. But there's something worse than depression, and that's numbness, when you just don't care. That's beyond depression. That's the ultimate giving up. The ultimate giving up is that I don't have any feelings about it. I'm totally disengaged, totally not involved. And one of the reasons that we are perhaps numb when we're numb and when we can't get motivated is because we're beyond despair. Despair would be a great thing because we'd know where we want to go, but we're just not going there. It's not happening. But beyond despair is when we don't even have the motivation, we don't even have the interest of getting anywhere. Why? What? I don't have any feelings. So, it's a form of yiyush. It's a form of total giving up. So yiyush is an interesting thing, because yiyush implies, it's actually a function of ownership, right? We know from Hilchas Mitzia that yiyush is a function of ownership. The only yiyush that makes a difference is the yiyush of somebody who owns an object. If I lose something and you give up on me finding it, that's not yiyush. If I lose something and I give up on finding it, then that's yiyush, right? So we have to realize something, that we are actually in charge of something. We're actually responsible for someone else. Our lives are not our own. Just saw a story a couple of weeks ago of Yaakov Glinsky in his Sefer. Tells a true story about right after the Holocaust. Obviously, there were thousands and thousands of survivors, and each one of them had just impossible stories. There's one particular Yid who was absolutely, he lost everything. He lost everything. Lost his wife, his children, his town, his Rebbe, his Kehillah, lost everything. He's in Eretz Yisrael, and he's given up. He has no reason to live. His chaver took him to the Chazon Ish, and to see what the Chazon Ish would do to help him, to help him come back to life. So the Chazon Ish told him a story. Chazon Ish told him, true story, there was a younger man learning in Kohl in Europe, and he was supported by his wife. His wife ran this business, in which she was a retail business. She bought things wholesale, tchotchkes and whatever it is, and then she would sell it, and it was a very good business. She was the only one in her town running it, and that's how she supported her husband. So came the fair in the big city, I think in Bialystok, and she goes to the big fair to acquire her stuff. So she comes to the big fair, and she has her purse with all of her money, and she loses it. She puts it down for a second, she turns around, it's gone. She's wiped out. She has nothing. She can't buy anything, she can't sell anything, she can't buy anything to sell. She doesn't know what to do. She goes to the Rav of the town, and she says to the Rav, in case anybody turns in a purse with gold coins, it's mine, it's my life savings, and I don't know what we're going to do. I'm wiped out. The next day, I think it was the shofet, comes to the Rav with the purse. And he says, I found this. And he says, and I know you know whose it is, because I know you were looking. But guess what? This is a city, Shavuba Gayim. He's a Talmud Chacham, the shofet. He says, it's a city that the majority of Gayim, and the Lacha is, when it's something like this, the majority of Gayim, it's Yish. The owners are Meyayish. They don't, because Gayim don't have a mitzvah of the Shavuot Aveda. And therefore, she's Meyayish, it's Hefker, I picked it up, it's mine. This is my money. The Rav is stumped. And the Rav doesn't know what to do. He knows whose it is, whose it was. Sounds like a good taina. Sends the shayla to Rav Chaim Eiser. Rav Chaim Eiser sends back, I don't know if it was a telegram or a messenger. Rav Chaim Eiser says, the money belongs to her. Because the money doesn't belong to her. Because Mashakana Isha Kana Baila. And therefore, the husband who's sitting and learning in his shtetl, he has no idea that the money's lost. And therefore, there's no yiyush. She's miyayish, but it's not hers to be miyayish. Says the Chazon Ish to this yid, your life is not your own to give up on. You don't have a right to give up. Your life belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, what yiyush? You don't have a right. You're not living for yourself. You're living for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how we have to understand it. The neshama that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put in us, and that he's going to take from us, that neshama is not our own. The whole life that he's given us is not our own. And he didn't give it to us for ourselves. He didn't give it to us to use for ourselves. He gave it to us to use for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we're shamrim. And he's mafkid it to us. And we have a halacha that we have to make sure. And when we wander, and when we otherwise heap all kinds of insult on the neshama by using it for other things, so then the neshama becomes an aveda. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not miyayish. We know he's going to get it back. He knows exactly where it is. But the neshama is an aveda, so to speak. It's taken away from the owner. It's lost. That's what tshuva is. Tshuva is hachzaras aveda. Tshuva is returning a lost object. It's a mitzvah for us to return the lost object, which is the neshama that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Literally to return it. And it's a v'salata mayam. We don't have a right. The halacha is you're not allowed to turn away from a lost object. You're obligated to come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're obligated to bring the neshama back. Which brings me to an amazing thing that I saw in the name of the Chavetz Chaim. As a matter of fact, not only did I see in the name of Chavetz Chaim, according to the story, the Chavetz Chaim actually called everybody together. I don't know if you ever heard this. Chavetz Chaim actually called everybody together to his home for a shmooze at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night. And this is what he said. It was 2 a.m. on a Shabbos night, and he called everybody to his house, and this is what he said. And I have to tell you something. As you all know, I was in Radin 3 summers ago, and the Chavetz Chaim's house no longer stands there because they took it and moved it to Muncie, New York. It's in a storehouse in New York while they resolve who really owns it. But the foundations of the Chavetz Chaim's house in Radin are still there. So when I was at the yeshiva there, I knew the Chavetz Chaim lived close to things. I wandered around and I found the foundations of his house, and I actually stood inside, so to speak, the walls of the house of the Chavetz Chaim, just to say that I was in the Chavetz Chaim's house. And then I walked the path that I thought would be the path that the Chavetz Chaim would have taken to the Beis Medrash, which he must have walked, well, probably only once a day. I assume he went and stayed there all day. I don't know. But when I hear that the Chavetz Chaim said these words in his house, it's like very personal. You know, it said, I mean, it's not, anyway, what came to the world through, in that space, what came from Shemayim, through the Chavetz Chaim, in that house, in that Beis Medrash, is just, you know, literally world-changing. So Chavetz Chaim calls a Shmuz at 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't know why, I don't know what else he said, but this is what he said. He was medayek in a dot. He was medayek in a mapik he. It says, a kind of shemesh and a satabi tahorahi, a tavarasa tayatarta tanafakamugi. The shemesh that you placed in me is pure, you created it, and you're going to take it away from me, you're going to return it to me. Lachzira, says the Chavetz Chaim, has a mapike, which means lachzir asa, you're going to return that neshama to me, says the Chavetz Chaim. It's not like we think that there's going to be a Tchias HaMesim and he's going to put a neshama in us. It's going to be that neshama that we have now, that neshama is going to come back. And says the Chavetz Chaim almost these words, that this neshama, when it comes back, will carry on it the stains that we heaped upon it in this world. So we're going to come back, and he says there's not going to be a greater busha than to be walking around stained with stains on the neshama in Asad Lavo that we put on it now. Lachzibra, it's going, that neshama, the way I give it back to you, it's going to come back to me later. Now, there are all kinds of questions we can ask about that. What about the kapara? What about the Gehenna? What about the whole thing, the fire? What's that? Whatever it is. So, whatever it is, it could be stained. Sometimes you get something going to the cleaners and you get it cleaned up, but you can still tell there's something there. Whatever it is. The Chavetz Chaim says this. The Chavetz Chaim says that we can trust that it's true. We don't have to have it all figured out. But the point is, so this is the pikudin that we have. It's our job to keep it clean. Otherwise, it comes back. We announce, la'asid lovo, that we are, you know, that we weren't good shodrim. And that we stained it. And at that time, it'll matter to us, because that Olam Haba is nothing other than connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nothing else at all. So we're going to walk around with signs of the severance of our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we willfully accepted upon ourselves in Olam Hazeh. I saw in the Shabbat Shuvah drasha that the Maral gave. Maral says something very interesting about a Gemara Nida. The Gemara Nida says that Amar Rav Simlai, Darsh Rav Simlai, Lamahav La Dama B'mei Imo, Gemara Nida, Nunam Abeis, what is the Vlad like in the mother's womb? La Pinkas Shemakupal Umunach Yadu Ashtet Stav, like a Pinkas. A Pinkas is like a tablet, or actually more like a ledger, right? That the fold, it's a folded ledger inside the woman. He goes and describes the hands and the elbows and how the whole thing, how the fetus is folded up. But he says the Maral, you know why it's called a Pinkas? Because the person is born like a blank ledger, and written onto that ledger, it's not just that there's a cheshbon up there, written onto the human being is all of the IOUs that HaKadosh Baruch Hu owes the person, and all the IOUs that the person owes HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a ledger, Pinkas. And that's, says the Maral, that's the tshuva to those who argue that a person is not responsible. It says when a person realizes that he is a Pinkas, which means he is a walking record of everything that he does, and everything that he's accountable for, and everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is accountable to him for. He's a walking ledger, so then he knows he's totally responsible. That's what the Mishnah Nova says the Maral. Look at three things. Know what's above you. Ayin Roa V'ozen Shamas. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees everything. He hears everything. And every single thing is written in a book. You know where the book is? Your being, your very being. That's why it's kapinkas, like it's literally a ledger. Says Maral, that's the answer to those who say that a person is not responsible. When a person realizes that his life itself is that ledger, then he exercises bechira and he starts being responsible for his life. So that's on one level. the level of responsibility that we have, not to ourselves, it's not our life. It's not a question of whether we care for ourselves. It's on one level. But then there's something else. There's also a different level of motivation. See, if we think, for example, that the way we're going to get motivated for Rosh Hashanah is purely fear. Now, there's different levels of fear. The fear that is desired, the tittering that our ancestors had when Elul came and when Yom HaDin approached, that tittering wasn't, I'm going to be in trouble, I better shape up or else I'm going to go to Gehenna. That was not that's not the Emes HaDin we're talking about. The Emes HaDin we're talking about is a recognition that we are accountable to the Borei Olam, that we actually are aware. It's not a fear, like, I'm in trouble, I better do something so I can stay out of trouble. It's actually an awareness that the Borei Olam is holding me accountable and that he actually knows and is aware of everything. So to look at Stam, to become afraid, so to speak, because Yom HaDin is coming and I might die this year, Chas V'Shalom. Or I could live. I might be rich this year, or I might be poor. That means, if that's what gets us to wake up to Rosh Hashanah, that means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has scared servants. So now he has servants who are scared. Imagine being a melech who has avadim who do whatever the melech wants because they're afraid that he'll cut off their head. They have no devotion to him whatsoever. They just want to make sure that they themselves don't end their service that day with a guillotine, right? So that's not a service of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's a selfish motivation. Halavai, that we should have that kind of motivation. But that's not the Madrega that we're looking for in Rosh Hashanah. That's not, we're capable of more than that. Guilt, we're guilty. We're bad. We did bad things. We shamed ourselves. So that means that now Kodesh Baruch Hu has shamed Avadim. He now has a Klal Yisrael filled with shame, serving a Kodesh Baruch Hu properly till their shame wears off. Right? That's not what a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants either. He doesn't want shamed Avadim. What does a Kodesh Baruch Hu want? He wants Avinu Malkeinu. He wants us to be relating to him either as our Melech, with devotion, with loyalty, or he wants us relating to him as a son, with love, with care, with connection. Avinu, Malkeinu, those two dimensions. So, when it comes to Malkeinu, so we have, you know, the famous Gemara in Gittin, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comes to meet the sovereign of Rum. So he says, he bows down to him, and so he says, why are you bowing down? He says, because you're king. He says, Ado Idna Lab Malkana, till now I wasn't the king. This is why people of Bali Madrego, when they come to Rosh Hashanah and they hear HaMelech, they titter because they're embarrassed. Because how could they be declaring now that HaMelech, where was I all year long? If I hold these Melech in Rosh Hashanah, how come I didn't behave this way all year long? Ad ho'idna lav malkana, till now I wasn't the Melech? So, what does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch is a Melech? What does it mean? What kind of behaviors would we show if we thought of HaKadosh Baruch as a Melech? So let's just think it through. Number one, we know one rule about a melech. Ein melech below am. There's no king if he doesn't have a nation. Which means that if I do everything in the world properly, if I do tshuva properly, if I serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu properly, if I become the biggest tzaddik ever in the history of the universe, and I don't do it in the context of being a member of Am Yisrael, then I'm not doing what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants, because his malchus isn't on me. His malchus is on Klal Yisrael. And I'm a member of Klal Yisrael. And as a member of Klal Yisrael, I'm interested in crowning HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a melech and recognizing it. Which means a totally different tefillah when we approach Rosh Hashanah. I'm not talking about Rosh Hashanah itself. Now, tonight Shemoneh Esrei is a totally different Shemoneh Esrei. Because the entire Shemoneh Esrei is a function of recognizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a melech of an am. Re'eino v'anyeinu, v'rivari v'eino. Baruch Hashem v'am, go'al Yisrael. Right? Klal Yisrael is having tzaras. Please spare us in tzaras. Es samach David avdecha, Mashiach. Why am we davening for that? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Malchus is incomplete. Why are we davening about Yerushalayim? Because Yerushalayim is the throne room, so to speak, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore the Melech has no throne. The Melech has no Yerushalayim. And we're concerned about the Melech. All of these tefillas. Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. I am a descendant in an Am of those who founded an Am. So that's a whole different approach. We're concerned not for ourselves. We're concerned for the Am, because the Am makes a Kodesh Baruch Hu the Melech. Then there's the love. There's the Avinu. There's He's our Father. And one powerful way that we're shayach to on our Madrega is the fulfillment of the Pasuk. Chazal say this almost literally. Chazal, it's not just a drasha. Say Chazal, that the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu should become beloved through you. You shall cause him to be loved. That's how they tie up V'ohavta. If not, you shall love. V'ohavta. You shall cause him to be loved. Your behavior causes him to be loved. So yesterday, I was trying to get out of a parking lot onto La Vista Road. And I found an opening, I thought, and it was not a very smart thing. And I shot into traffic, and a car bore down on me, mostly to show me how ridiculous I was. He could have slowed down faster, but he didn't want to. He wanted to show me that I was not smart. And then I realized I have a problem, because I was going from one part of La Vista Road, and I was going to turn into Beit Sheka's parking lot. But that's a problem, because now he knows that the idiot who came in front of him is now going to Shul. So I said to myself, I can't do that. I can't turn into the parking lot. He'll know who I am. Not who I am, but he'll know what I am. So I said, I'll have to turn down into one of the side streets. I started turning down into Biltmore. Then I realized, he knows the whole place is filled with Jews. So I have to keep on driving. So he'll think, I'm serious. So he'll think, because I'm responsible for what he thinks about God. That's what it is. At that moment, I realized I'm responsible for what he thinks. My behavior, I'm carrying the Ribbono Shel Olam's name through the world. And I have to make sure that he doesn't, I'm going to cause a chilul Hashem. So there are moment-by-moment opportunities all the way. And that's Avinu. That's where we absolutely want to cause him to be Nevel Yodecha. And forget about the stranger or the guy, which is also important. And could we clearly daven for that in Rosh Hashanah? We're talking about all the Goyim. Yeda kol pa'ul. But forget about that. What about the person sitting next to us on Rosh Hashanah? That he should see us and love God because we're devoted to God, and it changed the way we behave. Because we actually are so connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we're a pleasure to be with. That's what it should say. So there's things we can do. We're shayach to that. We can actually see ourselves as Avinu. He's our Father. We're His children. And we want to reflect Him in our behavior. Now, very quickly, before we dive in Maariv, I mentioned one of the goals of a shmooze is to change your view. I want to show you something very interesting in the Rambam. We all know that the Rambam's mathematical computation of what makes a tzaddik, what makes a vanity, what makes a rasha. The Rambam says whoever has a majority of zechuyos is a tzaddik, whoever has a majority of rishayim, of averus, is a rasha. And then the Rambam says, among other things, he says, this shikul, this weighing, isn't according to the number of merits and sins, but rather it goes according to their size. Right? There's a merit that outweighs many, many averus. And he brings a positive. And there is an avera that goes against many, many merits. And what is the Rambam telling us? What does the Rambam think we're going to think that he tells us not to think? So I actually heard this from Rav Reuven Leuchter. I actually spoke to him about it yesterday to make sure I got this, because this thing was bothering me for a long time. What is the Rambam telling us not to think? Don't think that this goes according to the number of mitzvahs and averus. The Rambam just insulted me if he told me that, to not think that. That he thinks I'm going to think that? He thinks that I'm going to think that if I did 10 mukzah averus, right, that somehow is going to outweigh one time when I had atzelus nefashos? Or there's the other way around. If I do 10 at a drabbanans properly, right, that I'm going to actually think that those numbers of averas, those numbers of mitzvahs are going to outweigh chas v'shalom, eish es ish, or avodah zarah, or shvichas damim. Rambam can't possibly think that I'm going to think that. I mean, Rambam's not talking to fools. What's he talking about over here? The shikol zeh, eino lefi minyan. It's not according to the number. Oh, I thought that the number of good deeds is going to outweigh the number of bad deeds, and that's not, who could think that? So the Rambam's not talking about that. The Rambam's talking about an accounting, which is different than counting numbers. The Rambam's saying, don't think that you're going to look in the Shulchan Aruch and you're going to find out what's important and what's not important. And then you'll focus and the whole cheshbon over here is according to what the Shulchan Aruch says. No! You have to be a firm Jew all the time. And that has nothing to do with Hilchas Tshuva. It has nothing to do with, and when you do an Avera, you have to do Tshuva even in the middle of the summer, well before Elul. That's not what I'm talking about over here. We're talking about a shikol, which is, I'm telling you, but what I'm telling you about Rosh Hashanah, I'm telling you not about the normal cheshbon of what's important. This shikol has to do with whether or not you're connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's all about the connection, and that's why the Rambam says in this passage, the Rambam says, "V'ein shokman ela b'daito shel kei deos." The only shikol is according to the opinion and the das, the awareness of kel deos. V'hu hayodeya heich orchinos chuyos kenegan vos. Only he knows. So Rambam is telling us two things, and we'll close with this. Number one, the Rambam is saying, if you're going to start getting into the game of counting, you're missing the point. This is not about amassing piles of merits and demerits, stars. This is about a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's about being connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What you're focusing on, what you're waking up to, is that there's HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you're relating to Him. And you're actually aware of Him. And you're focused on Him. What's important to you? What obsesses you? What preoccupies you? What's your focus in life? What do you think about when you wake up in the morning? That's what it is. And that's why he says, Daito shel kadeos, because das is already about relationship. It's not just knowledge. It's about relationship. So the whole idea here is that the Rambam is telling you, don't think that you're still going to go with a halacha computation. That's not what it is over here. It's about a relationship, an awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu at all times. That's what we're looking for. And that's really what the goal is here. The avodah in Elul is simply to develop a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the avodah of Elul. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us an opportunity for. And this is what our job is. Remove distractions, take responsibility for the life that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to us, and stop worrying about saving our souls. Worry about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the purpose of our existence, which is to serve Him as avadim, to serve Him as children, to reflect His ways in the world, to make sure that He's known in the world. This is the opportunity that we have. And notice where our passion is, because when our passion is elsewhere, that's the source of avodah zarah. And when there's no passion, that's mitzvah anashim lumada, that's simply habit. And we don't want to be doing habit either. We don't want to be doing the right thing out of habit. We want to be thinking. And we want to notice where our passion is, what do we care about. Mitzvah Hashem, we should have a ksiva, chesima tova. And I remind you, we're going to amplify on all these things, drop by drop. Next week, 10 o'clock, if you want, we'll sit together and we'll go through a few short minutes of thought each time. Sorry that we're 4.5 minutes late.